Yeah, my job is either to take this on home or to run you home or something like that. Well, good evening, and thank you all for attending this session. After Jeree's session, I promise you I won't cry. But what all of us have in common, John, Jeree, myself, Larry, is that the work that we do at City Square is not just a job for us, it's a passion. And it is one that we not only feel deeply about, but that we are deeply committed to. And it has to do with not just fighting poverty, but fighting injustice and fighting for equality and equity across our city. And so if you know anything about if you know or have read anything about what's happening in Dallas most recently, then you understand how important that is. You also understand how vacuous a space that is, because there aren't a whole lot of people who are in that space whose commitment to fighting poverty and racism and injustice and equity is as total as what I believe City Square is. So I thank Larry for giving me this opportunity, not only for today, but also for giving me the opportunity for following that passion and allowing me the opportunity to help or to allow that passion to grow and mature, and working alongside people who, as I've said, almost from the day I got there, who wake up every day committed to finding ways to fight poverty on behalf of our neighbors. And so I'm proud to be a part of the team and grateful for the work I get a chance to do. So I was asked about what area of the book I was going to speak on. Excuse me. And it is, and I have to look at this because I hadn't looked at it in a while. We've been dealing with some other stuff. Breakthrough, Follow Darkness, and Act Beyond Your Reach, which is really is the sum total of all this that that I have up there. We're talking about fighting the systems that keep our neighbors in poverty. There are systems that I have described as systems that are designed to keep poor neighborhoods and poor people poor, and so that poverty and injustice and the like are not just accidents. All right, they are in many ways baked into systems because of past injustices, segregation, racism, white supremacy, greed, materialism, baked into these systems, and they are designed to keep poor people poor. Now, yes, there is an element of self-determination and hard work and grit and all that other kind of stuff that can help a person overcome that. But basically, when you talk about people who have overcome that, you're talking about people who have, for the most part, demonstrated exceptionality that most of us don't have. All right, and so these are people who need the system itself to be made more just in order to be able to overcome it. So that's what we're going to talk about. I'm the Vice President of External Affairs, which is, I call that Public Policy Plus. So what I do is, on the one hand, build relationships with organizations that can enhance our programming, and we hope we can also help to make their programming much more effective. And on the other hand, there's a side of this that deals with public policy, so all that implies. So when you look at City Square's mission, as Jeree has pointed out, we fight the causes and effects of poverty through service, advocacy, and friendship. So advocacy is the aspect or the part of our work that that a part of our work that impacts or is impacted by that mission. I want to show you our team. There's me on the left, of course. And Ashley Postel Wilson, who is our Director of External Affairs. Alex Thompson, who is Manager of Advocacy and Outreach. That title is really a misnomer, but Alex does a lot more than that, and we're really proud of the work that he and Ashley do. And Chuck, who is our community organizer. And then also we have on our team what I call our Second Chance Improvement Program, which is a program that is a court diversion program that takes young adults, 17 to 24, who have been arrested for felonies, and takes them before those felonies are adjudicated, puts them in a program where they have wraparound services that help them to address deficits in their lives. After the program, which I think is 9 months, if they successfully complete the program, then they have their record expunged. They no longer have that hanging over them, so they can go on and live productive lives without a criminal record. Fort Oak Cliff is a program led by Taylor Toynes, which is a grassroots program in the Oak Cliff section of the city that focuses on education and neighborhood redevelopment. And he too has been part of and a collaborator with our team. So what is external affairs? It is both, as we've talked before, it's a public policy advocacy arm of City Square. That's probably what we're most known for, even though we do more than that. We connect the dots between our programming work and the policies that affect that work. Then we advocate for our neighbors, for our staff, our programs, our mission, and the community as a whole. So most of the work that we do, even though some of it is on behalf of our programs, because just about every program that we have has some kind of public policy implication. If you're talking about housing, if you're talking about hunger, you're talking about health, whatever it is, most of it is dealing with some aspect of public policy. So we will get in there as necessary and as we find ways to enhance our programs through public policy. Through our programmatic efforts, we serve people who are in poverty and tackle those issues that keep poor neighborhoods poor. Now, those issues may not be programmatic. We just finished, for instance, a long fight where we finally got the Dallas Independent School District to allow the city to vote on a tax ratification election, which means essentially because the state has so underfunded education in the past, we were asking them to let us raise our taxes so that we could better fund education until such time as we went to Austin and addressed that. So now we don't have an education program at City Square per se, but education is I don't think anybody will argue the fact that one of the aspects of poverty that or institutions that, if not addressed because of historic injustices and the history of segregation and discrimination in Dallas as well as elsewhere, I don't think anybody will argue that is a root cause of poverty. The disparity between the type of education that kids receive in far north Dallas, which is the more affluent area, and south Dallas is stark. And so this would help our people get more dollars into education. We build partnerships and alliances with other entities and institutions, and we'll have examples for you on that later on. And then also we do public policy both at the city level, public school, community college, county, state, and in some cases even the federal level. what does our policy look like? What does it mean? This is for those of you who are, anybody else in here a preacher? Okay, this will help you because this is actually three parts of a sermon that I preach. All right. So what does it look like, and how do we develop our public policy agenda and work our efforts? The three parts of that sermon, I'll start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. All right. So start where you are. When I was presented with the opportunity to become a part of City Square's staff, this is what I had. First of all, we had the reputation of CDM, Central Dallas Ministries at the time, or City Square, which was at that time pretty robust as it was. And so that was what I knew I would work with, because most of the people who knew about Central Dallas Ministries knew that it did good work and knew about Larry and knew about his heart for the poor and his commitment. And so that was a plus. I was a former pastor at the New Mount Moriah Baptist Church. I'd been engaged in issues of social justice and neighborhood redevelopment for almost my entire 22-year career there. And had developed a ministry that had a focus on social justice. The city of Dallas was a focus of a lot of that because we had done housing, we had done both immigration issues and a number of different issues that dealt with the city of Dallas. And so I was no stranger even at that there. And then we also had the history of racism and classism divisions in Dallas. That was what you had to work with. And if you did not go into this work knowing that, you could naively go in blaming something else, but that would not address really what is at the heart of most of the issues that we talk about when we deal with poverty. See, Central Dallas Ministry had at that time a $3.7 million budget, which meant that it had some collateral both in the donor community and some degree of reputation throughout the city of Dallas. I think our budget last year was what?
20 million.
So that was 15 years ago. So we've grown pretty fast since, but even at that 15 years ago meant that we were a player. Okay? So that's where you start. One of the things, just to give you a tip on the message, you have to start where you are. You can't start where you want to be. You have to start where you are. So use what you have. We had experience in community organizing. And I think I need to say this because there are a lot of misnomers about community organizing. There's community organizing of individuals, which has some levels of success and is what most people think of when they talk about community organizing. What my background was in institutional-based community organizing. So we organized institutions. We organized churches, we organized schools, we organized neighborhood associations. We didn't just organize individuals. And so we had that. I had relationships both political relationships and relationships in the community. And so I knew that I could leverage those into the work that we were going to be doing in areas of public policy. I had experience in working in the political arena, and broad curiosity and interest. So it's kind of hard for me to just settle on wanting to do one thing, which I'll show you how we kind of made that work for us in a minute. And then I had on and off either individuals and or volunteers or other support staff, even before this staff that you saw now, young, energetic, competent, compassionate staff. Can't do all this work by yourself. And they've always brought into this work the capacity to be able to do multiple things at one time. And so when you look over here, that left side of the of that column is literally just about not quite, but just about all the work that we've done over the past 15 years in terms of public policy, working on for-profit colleges, dealing with the wrongfully incarcerated and getting their compensation increased, payday lending. We got the farmers market to accept food stamps. If you might think that was that should not have been a big deal. It took a year to get that done, but we finally got that done. Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, we literally helped promote the Affordable Care Act and got people signed up with that. We do get out the vote. I told you about the TRE and the equity fight that we've been in and finally gotten passed. What's really important about that, we got Dallas ISD to expand its, and this is a recent victory, one of the reasons why it's not up there. We got DISD to expand its equity council, if you will, from 9 members to 23. All right, and that which means that it will now have representation from literally all across the district to have input into their efforts to make Dallas a more equitable school district. All right, I was for Larry. How long was it? Almost 8 years. A columnist for the Dallas Morning News, which allowed me to be able to get our values out to the rest of the city and to write more about those things that were important to us that weren't on our program agenda, but were a part of our values. And then we have also the issue of Confederate monuments, which was recently complete. Dallas doesn't get enough credit for that. We actually got the Robert E. Lee statue taken down out of Lee Park, got the name changed, and then had the Confederate Memorial in Pioneer Park, which is in the Convention Center, thank you, which is in the Convention Center. It's slated to be taken down. It's just that the fight's in court now, but once the court rules, that will be taken down. So we've had the opportunity to do all of this, and these are some of the coalitions that we have helped either form or be a part of or led. The Anti-Poverty Coalition, Unify South Dallas, Invest Ed Texas, which was central in getting the education bill passed at the state level this last session, HB3, North Texas for Historical Justice, which has worked with us, with whom we've worked to get the Confederate monuments taken down, Strong Schools, Strong Dallas, which worked on education, TFLA, which is Texas Faith Alliance for Texas Fair Lending Alliance, which is the group that has helped us with payday lending. On and on, you see those are all parts of those coalitions that we have either led, participated in, and or paid a major part in. Yeah, go ahead. And if y'all have any questions, please just stop me.
Payday lending, what was your involvement there? Was it trying to eradicate it, or what would you ever make it more?
We'll get to that in a minute. Because that is next. Again, we talked about our external affairs department work. It's a hybrid when it comes actually to doing this type of work. It's a mixture of institutional broad-based community organizing, research awareness, public awareness of and education, and then creative uses of various media platforms. As I said, I was a columnist for the Morning News, also had a blog. We also do now podcasts, which help, again, get our message out relative to our values. And then we do this work on 3 levels. In terms of advocacy, we join the chorus of voices, which we will stand with others when they are fighting issues that are resonant with our values. Contributory, we will join others in the action and lend resources, and then we lead out and we initiate conversation and action. All right. right. So payday and auto title loans. So I'm hoping that we all know what a payday loan is. Those are loans that usually are small weekly loans where you can borrow $500 and at what it can be anywhere from 300 to 500% interest, and it's extortion, really. It's loan sharking at the end of the day. And so we provided leadership in the effort to get the strongest payday loan ordinance passed in the nation, which is it's known as the Unified Ordinance. It was passed, that ordinance was passed along with a land use ordinance, which both limited the scope and the impact of payday lending in Dallas. And this talks about the main components of the ordinance. The payday or auto title loans have to register with the city. Payday loans charges are limited to 20% of the borrower's monthly income. Loans cannot have more than 4 installment or 3 rollovers. The proceeds from each installment or renewal must reduce the loan principal by 25%, and then it gives you the definition of the rollover. So this was done because the state wouldn't act, and the state's failure to act meant that we had to do something. Me, Ann Bedore, Stephanie Mace with United Way, and Ann Bedore of Texas Appleseed, and Jerry Allen, who was a city councilman at the time, were responsible for actually kind of pushing this through. And it shows kind of what this hybrid will do, because we both formed relationships within the Anti-Poverty Coalition, but also broadened those relationships with other organizations and got this done. So this is kind of the way we worked to get the payday loan ordinance passed. We identified the issue. We built the constituency. We had a meeting with about 30 to 35 other nonprofits, looking at what they consider to be one of the biggest issues with the people that they were seeing. And almost to a person, the two issues that bubbled to the top were payday lending and financial management. Payday lending was number one. And so we started trying to figure out how we would address that. And we simply went to the city council and said we wanted them to pass the strongest possible ordinance that would regulate payday lending. So we built the constituency. The power analysis and politics, we had to know who it was that was pulling these strings. So we had to learn about the payday loan industry. We had to learn about who was most responsible for this in Dallas. Research and analysis, learning about the industry, learning about its impact and its damages, then identifying allies. So we had those 30 organizations who by and large were on board with fighting this fight, and then we continued doing the public awareness campaigns. We had small meetings, we did blog posts, we wrote op-eds, we did public speaking. City Square actually did online petitions for this. We got almost 2,000 signatures on online petitions. Another church got like 1,500. So that when we went to the city council for the day they came to vote, we presented them with 4,000 petitions and signature letters signed by significant religious and civic leaders asking them for this ordinance. All right. And it's a process that's been chronicled in the University of New Mexico and the University of Utah's report. They did a report on this called The Power of Community Action, Anti-Payday Loan Ordinances in Three Metropolitan Areas. And then this quote from and Bedore with Texas Appleseed. Dallas is the first city to pass an ordinance looking at the structure of the loan that was creating problems in the low-income communities. To my knowledge, I haven't seen anything like that before. There has been a lot of action nationally, but mostly on the zoning front. She praised the Anti-Poverty Coalition in Dallas, led by City Square and United Way, that has been quite engaged, and gave Allen, that's Councilman Jerry Allen, credit for being a pioneer locally. It's very impressive for me to see how he's shown such passion and commitment on this issue. The Dallas ordinance not only addresses the most extreme cases, it puts a hard stop to how long that cycle can go on. Dallas adopted this ordinance first. Austin came in, and I think the week after we did it, Austin adopted. San Antonio adopted right after that. Now it's been adopted by about 50 different cities throughout the state. Yeah.
Just a second. Don't you think that the payday lending thing actually is just the surface that people don't recognize as institutionalized things that keep the policies and that kind of thing that keep people in poverty?
Yeah, exactly.
People don't recognize, even think about the fact that these are the kind of things that have been in place for a long time. They don't recognize. I mean, if you don't really think about it, you don't ever think about it. That would be something that would keep somebody from moving up.
Right.
But it was something that penalized people over and over and
right.
kept them down.
Right. And keeping poor people poor is almost a misnomer, because you had teachers who were making $60,000 a year who were also caught up in payday loans. You had other professionals who were caught up, people who were making good wages or living wages, who had those wages really stunted by the fact that they had these payday loans. And so this was a way that we could blunt that in light of the fact that we had no support at the state level to get this done, so we had to go local with it. The fight at the state level still goes on. Last time we counted, at the state level, the payday loan industry spent like $8 million fighting us to keep this thing intact, and had spent like $2.3 million in terms of buying off, essentially, legislators. So it's an uphill battle still at the state. We're still fighting, but this represents success that we frankly were hoping we could get, but it also gives us a at least an understanding that there are cities across the state that are still looking to fight this scourge, and I understand Abilene is also in this fight. I want to look at, if I can, this is more about what we've accomplished this year, and I want to see, yeah, there it is. This talks about the rest of our work this year.
On Thursday, May 16th, City Square partnered with the NAACP and Paul Kunkhaus to host a mayoral forum with the Bronx candidate, Eric Johnson, as moderator. The event was free to the neighbors who packed the auditorium and engaged with candidates. City Square Skip Court participants were also in attendance. They stood proudly to tell their story and ask questions of the candidates. One participant, DeAndre Wade, even walked away from the forum with a job offer from a local startup. He took the offer and is still working there today.
External affairs began the development of the City Square Studio in January. The space and equipment available from the studio has allowed the external affairs team to begin filming our monthly urban engagement book club meetings, as well as ones for urban engagement podcasts, where Reverend Gerald Bridge brings monthly guest day to talk about issues and events impacting our neighbors. On February 21st, together with the Anti-Poverty Coalition, City Square held a community briefing at St. Luke Community United Methodist Church. More than 200 people attended, representing allied organizations across Dallas, united to push forward on our common legislative interests. Then, on March 6th, nearly two dozen staff from across City Square gathered in the pre-dawn hours at our Opportunity Center in South Dallas and traveled together to the state capitol in Austin. There, they spent a full day meeting with state lawmakers, advocating for action on legislation that will impact our neighbors.
City Square External Affairs is raising our voices on behalf of our neighbors. Vice President of External Affairs, Gerald Britt, recently published an op-ed in the Dallas Morning News advocating for more action to address the root cause of what is quickly becoming a record year of violence in our city. City Square's External Affairs team intends to continue monitoring and speaking about this epidemic of violence. In addition to hosting the Urban Engagement Podcast, Reverend Britt also visited the Good God Podcast for a discussion about racial justice with host George Mason, a pastor, theologian, and national leader in Baptist Church. The discussion can be found by visiting goodgodproject.com.
As part of City Square's long-running Urban Engagement Cinema Series, the External Affairs team partnered with the filmmakers of Grid, the Voter Suppression Playbook, to host an exclusive screening of the new film. Narrated by Jeffrey Wright, the documentary outlines 10 major steps being taken to suppress minority votes in Dallas, across Texas, and around the country. More than 100 people attended the film, with Reverend Gerald Britt hosting a panel after the screening to discuss voter suppression with Dallas leaders Windsor Barbee and Hector Flores.
City Square's External Affairs team recently took a leading role in successfully calling for Dallas ISP Board of Trustees to approve a 13-cent tax ratification election. The TRE gives voters the opportunity to infuse $116 million in additional operating revenue. This revenue will maintain strategic initiatives like early learning, increased teachers and staff pay, and protections against expected budget cuts at the state level. Share about Reverend Gerald Britt, the Strong School, Strong Dallas Coalition, which includes numerous organizations across North Texas, support these priorities to strengthen equity and accountability in our community. In line with those values and DISB's commitment to racial equity, we are asking the Board of Trustees to consider directing additional resources to the district's historically under-resourced and high-income schools. City Schools External Affairs team has also partnered with the Best Fair Texas Congressional Lawmakers for passing HB 3 during the 2019 state legislature. The bill provided $6.5 billion to improve public education plus $5.1 billion for lower tax and local school districts. Our team visited Austin numerous times during the legislature to speak in favor of the bill this morning. Reverend Britt is also co-author and op-ed with Dan Cooper, executive director of PowerChild, supporting HB3 and outlining its positive impact on impoverished students. The legislation passed unanimously in both the Texas House and Senate.
Okay, so that's the work we've done actually so far this year, and it is, I'm going to have to teach Ashley and Chuck to use their preaching voices when they're doing this, but it is just a tip of the iceberg in terms of what we have been able to do and what we've got plans to do in the future. I think what's also important is to understand that this type of work really is what, because it really lets our community and our city know that we're not just concerned about quote unquote feeding the poor. We're concerned about why people are hungry. That we're not just concerned about whether or not people get jobs. We're concerned about living wage jobs. We're not just concerned about people having homes. We're concerned about the issue of affordable housing all over the city. And this sends that message that our values are important and are in line with this. And so, you know, John did a television interview a week or so ago where he talked about one of our programming issues relative to a program that we're participating in that provides shelter for school-age children, temporary shelter for school-age children. I did an interview just a couple of nights ago where I talked about our work in advocating for a nonprofit grocery store in a poor neighborhood. They referred to us in the interview that they did with me as an advocacy organization. Well, we are both an organization that works on both programming and advocacy. And I think it makes us all that much more powerful because, frankly, we're the only organization in Dallas that has that kind of focus. And I think it enhances our programmatic emphasis enhances our advocacy work. Our advocacy work enhances the work that we do in terms of programming. Y'all have any questions or comments? That being, I did it all perfectly, and this is the first time.
They're letting y'all easy.
This being the first time I've ever used a PowerPoint presentation, I doubt if I did it perfectly. Excuse me. All right. Well, let me say what we do. What I do have a little bit of collateral for us here. These are copies of our legislative agenda here. That you can take this and can see what we went to. Austin to talk about, and then also some copies of some of the articles, the columns that were written in support of these issues for which we've advocated, and can kind of let you know exactly where our stance was on those issues, as well as some others that we haven't mentioned either in the wrap-up report or the summer report or in this presentation. So, all right. Yes, ma'am. That's a good question. There are young people, which is very interesting because, at first we were thinking that it's going to be hard attracting people to this type of work when we talk about advocacy and whatnot. We have actually never had the capacity to utilize everybody who's come and wanted to be a part of this. And so it is, I think it's a matter of disciplining, providing them with discipline, historic perspective, and also providing them with opportunities where they can kind of learn as they grow. I think that's important. I would love to be able to do some of what was done with me when I was a lot younger and growing up, because we had the opportunity to literally learn from the experts, which meant both politicians, authors, academics, activists, and learn from them about the issues that we were working on, which gave us, again, a more informed and more historic perspective on our advocacy.
This is an awkward question, but who do you kind of experience getting the most pushback from? You talk about systems as a whole. What do those look like?
I mean, it really depends. Depending upon the issue, some of the pushback is from politicians. Some of the pushback is from business leaders. Some of the pushback is from some of the pushback is from other nonprofits. It depends on what the issue is, and it's stuff that you have to not ignore, but you have to anticipate, and you have to be ready to make your case that much more forcefully. That makes sense. Yeah.
It's not quick. My question is quick. Our immediate context around our church is governmental subsidized housing, three apartment complexes right around us. And over the last 2 or 3 years, we've tried to build relationships with them through a lot of different ways. Most recently this summer, we partnered with City Square and our local YMCA to do the summer lunch program. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue that through the after school program now starting October 1st. So we're doing what we can,
mm-hmm.
Trying to start with relationship building, and that's been going as well as it can. After visiting with you guys a few weeks ago, we went, sat with John and talked about some things. We've come away with conviction of advocacy and trying to figure out how can we stand up for the betterment and safety of our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is who do we start with? Where would you recommend we start in that stance?
You know, you got the children. I'd start with the parents. And start asking them what's important to them, and work from there. You know, whatever those issues are, it may be employment, it may be public safety, it may be education, but start with them, so that you don't start addressing needs that they don't have,
right.
Or at least needs that they're not aware of. You know, I used to tell the story of this. We would have, when I was a pastor, we would have these churches that would come into our community to do mission work. And primarily they were white churches that would come in and they would be on these feel-good mission work junkets. And I talked with other pastor friends of mine, we hated to see them coming. We just hated it because, it doesn't feel good to think that where you are is an object of mission. And so they came in this one time and they with out of relationship with anybody in the community, nobody talked to the neighborhood association, they didn't talk to any churches, they painted this house and painted it nice, it was pretty and everything. The only problem is it was a drug house. and something that a next door neighbor could have told them if they had asked. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, I would start. You know, you've been dealing with their providing nutritious snacks and meals for their children and what. So start talking to the parents about what needs to be done with them. Again, it's starting where you are. You can't, So yeah, do that.
We've met some of them too.
And yeah.
Brought their children.
Yeah. Yeah. Just start with them and start building relationships with them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Yes, ma'am.
So I attend one of the churches in town, and it's a predominantly affluent white church, and I've noticed that though the church, that's the makeup of the church, the surrounding area is nothing like that at all. It's, you have different residents who are below the poverty line, and you have an array of issues in the area, a lack of resources on in every regard, not just financial. So as someone in my position who, I'm a part of the church, but I'm not in a place of leadership to do something about it. What would you recommend to churches who are in a context where there's no representative in their church that looks like they're?
You know, I would say that you would have to start real small. And anybody in that church with whom you have relationships, who sees what you see, start working and talking and building relationships throughout the community with them. And as you begin to do that and grow, you can take that back to the church and talk to them about what support you might need from them in terms of whatever it is you find out with relative to what your conversation with the community. You know, one of the things about community organizing, at least the way I was taught, was it all begins with conversation. It all begins with conversation that builds the relationships, that unearth issues that lead to action. But if you don't have those relationships, so you have relationships with people inside the church or have conversations with people inside the church that will lead to conversations with people outside the church. It doesn't take a whole lot. If you got two or three members of your church who feel the way you do, you can start beginning that process, you know, as soon as you believe that you have the right type of appetite to begin to do that work.
I may be stepping on toes, but I'm used to that because I've done it before. But a lot of times I think that people think of our mission work, they think about the far-flung area or something like that. Our biggest mission field is right next door.
Yeah.
Like Mississippi Square talks about the neighbors. But you said that your church was an area that there was a lot of people that were not like the affluent people that were in the church, that, you know, that might be a good place to start looking at building those coalitions and reach out to those folks, because our missions truly are. You know, like we don't have to go very far to find a place.
That's right. That's right. Okay.
Gerald, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Your wisdom. Thank all of you.